From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. Coming up...
Sometimes you have to walk. Basically, they wanted the sanctions lifted in their entirety, and we couldn't do that. They were willing to denuke a large portion of the areas that we wanted, but we couldn't give up all of the sanctions.
That was President Trump commenting on his summit with Kim Jong-un. Congressman Andy Harris is here in just a moment to discuss the importance of the North Korean summit. Plus, FRC recognized a record number of members of Congress for their true blue 100% pro-family voting record, 277 members of Congress. Dr. Harris is one of those. And the Methodist, in their annual gathering, which was held in St. Louis this year, rejected an affirmation of homosexuality and homosexual marriage. The opposition was mainly from delegates from overseas. My guest is Mark Tooley, president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy. At the bottom of the hour, our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin returns to discuss a ruling by a federal judge last Friday that declared the all-male draft unconstitutional. Is this setting the stage for drafting women into the military? The general has the answer. And are the Democrats in a pickle over the new Green Deal? We'll talk about that later here on Washington Watch. Hey, by the way, in case you want to catch my latest op-ed on FoxNews.com, it's Avoid the Twinkie Diet in Your Prayer Life. You can check it out at Fox News, the Fox News column at FoxNews.com, or just go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, earlier this morning, the FRC team held our annual True Blue Award ceremony on Capitol Hill to recognize some of the 277 members of Congress who were 100% on pro-family issues, and as I said earlier, that's a record. Well, joining me now is one of those True Blue members to discuss President Trump's summit with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un and some of the other items coming up in Congress. Dr. Andy Harris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
And I know we didn't get connect this morning, but congratulations on once again being a True Blue member of Congress.
Well, no, thank you very much. It's one of my proudest awards I get because, as you know, I've been pro-family when I was in Maryland State Senate and now in Congress, and I'm proud to earn that award.
And I'm going to talk about that in a moment because you've been not everybody knows your history, but you've been on the program many times. You came into politics because of your pro-life conviction. As a doctor, you worked your way into politics. I want to talk about that because we've got the Born Alive Infant Survivor Protection Act that's still out there, and that's coming up. I want to talk about that. But first, let's talk about the president's summit with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. How important is it that the president be engaging in this dialogue with Kim Jong-un?
Look, it's very important. Obviously, anyone in the world who has nuclear weapons, I think it's very important that we engage in a dialogue with them and bring that to a peaceful conclusion. And North Korea is no exception.
Now, President Trump, a lot of people, you know, critical how the president had a second summit, nothing came of it. Do you trust this president's ability, given his history in negotiating winning deals for America?
Oh, absolutely. You know, anyone who thought that he was going to come back from Hanoi with a deal doesn't understand, you know, how history flows. Reagan, in order to win the Cold War, had to walk away from the deal in Reykjavik. Was mm-hmm. widely criticized in the media, just like Trump is. I mean, you literally probably could replay the headlines from the post-Reykjavik headlines, and they'd be exactly the same, you know, about a failure, someone who doesn't understand foreign policy. The bottom line is, if the deal isn't good, you have to walk away from it. I think the president's exactly on the right track here. Keep the sanctions up until we get what the world needs, really, for peace.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Great analogy in history, because that's what Ronald Reagan did with the Soviets. He just said nope and got up from the table and walked away. Secretary Pompeo said, quote, "Our teams have gotten to know each other better. We know what some of the limits are, and we know where some of the challenges are. It is a very complex problem. We have said that since the beginning, that this would take time." But the fact that they're having conversations, the fact that North Korea has not launched any other missile since the first summit suggests to me that progress is being made.
Oh, absolutely. It's been over 450 days since North Korea launched the missile. Prior to that, it was an average of under a month. They were launching a missile more frequently than once a month. So we've already seen a change in the attitude. The sanctions are working. I think that, as someone said, holding this meeting in Hanoi was very clever in that the North Koreans could see what a communist country can do when it agrees to be peaceful with all its neighbors. And Vietnam has an economic resurgence that North Korea could have if it were not as aggressive, against its neighbors and the United States. So I think the bottom line is that the president is on the right track. This is an incredibly important negotiation. And I think in the end, if he holds the course, we will see a peaceful resolution finally to the Korean conflict.
Yeah, I just think it's encouraging that the dialogue is taking place, because when you're having conversations, that's a positive thing, because, you know, as you said, we've not had any other missile launches. We are in conversations not only directly between the two leaders, but their teams are talking. And you know, it's interesting, the press praised Barack Obama with the Iranian deal, the nuclear deal, but there was no conversations. They were just giving away money and lifting of sanctions for Iran for basically promises that were never kept.
That's absolutely right. If you go to the press reports around the time the JCPOA was being negotiated, what the press reports were is that the president needed it, President Obama needed this for his legacy. And when you begin a negotiation and the other side knows there is no way you will get up and walk out if the result is not good enough, you get a bad deal. And thank goodness that the president didn't take, President Obama's approach to negotiating with totalitarian regimes in his dealings with North Korea.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Dr. Andy Harris of Maryland is my guest. He's a member of the Appropriations Committee. And I want to switch gears now, Dr. Harris. A new economic report out today suggests the U.S. economy is actually doing pretty good. It grew at a rapid rate of 3.1% in 2018. It's the fastest pace for any calendar year since 2005. What do you attribute this economic success to? Is this a part of the tax overhaul and tax cut?
Well, certainly, some of the press would like you to believe that this is the end result of the Obama administration policy. But in fact, if you looked at the trends and you looked at the trend lines released by the White House today, the Obama economy was beginning to falter. And then with the election of the president, you had a resurgence to higher levels than highest level since 2005. That is no accident. It's a combination of tax cuts. It's a combination of realizing that the American economy depends on our business community providing jobs and employment and generating GDP. So it's no shock that if you actually lower the tax burden on U.S. companies, they hire more, they make more stuff, they just add more to the GDP. You combine that with much more favorable regulatory environment that the Trump administration has brought to the business dealings, and you've got a formula for success that we see. Not only that, but there is a positive. Once you create the positive attitude, it becomes almost self-fulfilling. People have a better opinion of what the economy is. Their consumer confidence bigger. They go out and buy more. The GDP grows even more. We're in that cycle right now, and the last thing we need is anything that will break that cycle. And unfortunately, what's going to come out of the House now, because we now have these Democratic socialists in the House, is our talk of policies that would break this economic growth.
If I recall correctly, the Obama team basically said that it was impossible for us to get to a growth rate of over 2%, that was what we were going to be locked into for years to come. But we've blown past that under this administration. I do think it's in large part the regulatory cuts, the stimulation with the tax cuts. It's working, but it doesn't appear that the media would give this administration credit for anything.
No, you're absolutely right. The Obama administration did say the economic forecasters there said that sustained growth more than 2%, that should be the average growth. That should be what Americans expect from growth. That's crazy. America is the greatest country in the world. We're the greatest free market economy in the world if you unleash it. And that's what President Trump has done. He's unleashed the economy. We've got to keep it unleashed. And again, the talk that's going around, you know, let's go ahead and let's raise the – I mean, the first thing that the new chairman of the Ways and Means Committee in the House, the new Democrat chairman, said, he was calling for an increase in the corporate tax rate. It's exactly the wrong thing to do. We're bringing jobs back into America. We're having companies decide to create their companies here in America, employ Americans, and that would all go down the drain if we just reverted back to our business-unfriendly environment of the last administration.
It was interesting, Dr. Harris, as I was reading some of the reports, negative reports about the economic numbers out today, you know, trying to put them in a negative spin, basically saying that we're not going to see growth past this, that we're going to now enter a decline. And it was interesting, I saw some make reference to the demographics, which you don't really see very often the left acknowledging that you have to have growth in your population in order to grow your GDP. And the policies of the left, as we're seeing, like with this really embracing of infanticide, it's certainly hard to grow your population when you view children in a negative sense and you're basically killing babies who are born.
Oh, absolutely. My gosh, as you know, abortion has removed over 50 million Americans from the population since it was legalized. You know, one of my colleagues over the weekend, she basically said that maybe we should think about not having children anymore. And, you know, again, this is if the Democrat socialists think that that's what's going to get us, what's going to get us economic growth and a positive future. You know, they ought to think again. But, you know, you bring up this, the infant born alive act. Again, as a physician who's worked in a delivery room, I can't even imagine how someone could not say that when a baby is born, that you don't do everything you can to make that, help that baby survive. I can't even imagine that. And yet 44 senators voted to allow that baby to be killed.
Yeah, it is shocking. Dr. Harris, we're just about out of time, but how hard do you think that the Republicans in the House will now work to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act now that the Senate has passed on it?
Oh, we haven't given up on it. We're gonna have discharge petitions. We're probably going to – I think we're going to use other methods to get it added on to other bills. We want every member in the House to take a position. We want their constituents to see if they really believe – that a child born alive should not be saved.
Well, we will help you in that pursuit. Dr. Andy Harris, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. One of our True Blue recipients, Dr. Andy Harris of Maryland. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. While you're there, you can read my piece in foxnews.com, but also you can be a part of helping advance this cause of life. Check out the banner at the top, End Birthday Abortion. You can send a baby hat, one of those little baby, cute little baby hats, to Nancy Pelosi and send a message. Babies should be protected under our laws. We'll talk more about that later. Coming up next, Mark Tooley's here. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, the United Methodist Church will maintain its official position that homosexuality is contrary to Christian teaching. That was a decision that came following days of contentious debate over the issue at their annual meeting that just concluded. My next guest, Mark Tooley, who is the president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy, was there in St. Louis and saw the vote. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you.
Mark, describe for our listeners what took place in St. Louis as this debate, which has been going on for several years in the United Methodist Church, took place.
Well, the debate has actually been going on for 45 years, and the Orthodox side has always won in terms of reaffirming the church's teachings that marriage is for sex between husband and wife, and requiring that standard of clergy and prohibiting same-sex marriages in our churches. But as you know, all the other mainline Protestant churches had those same debates, and the Orthodox conservative side lost almost in every denomination, but Methodists have been the exception. And that is because Methodism is a global church, and almost 45% of the church is in Africa, where, of course, their beliefs are very traditional. So thanks to the African delegates, the efforts to liberalize the church's marriage teaching was defeated, despite the full aggressive push by the forces of the institutional church and the bishops and others in America.
Mark, step back for just a moment, and I want to ask you kind of a 30,000-foot question. Why do you think there has been, you said 45 years that this has been going on, to get the church to reject biblical truth and teaching? Why do you think there has been and remains such an intense effort to force the church to reject this biblical truth on human sexuality? Why do these groups just not sidestep the church? Why do they want to co-opt the church?
Well, I suppose it gets down to a belief by the other side that the autonomous individual is the supreme authority, not the Bible, not the God of the Bible, not the church. But the individual chooses the ultimate right and wrong. And so for the church to declare that an individual who has declared a particular identity is central to what they want has become unacceptable, obviously in American culture, but also unacceptable in parts of American Christianity even.
So now there's rumors that are not rumors. There's discussions about those that the quote-unquote progressives that did not get their way are discussing leaving. Will they start their own branch of the Methodist Church?
Well, that will be fascinating. There's almost no way the liberals can win in the future as their parts of the church continue to decline, and the growing parts of the church are conservative, whether in America or around. The first time they're actually talking about the possibility of leaving, creating a new liberal Methodist church, and that will take time to unfold, but I think ultimately it will have to happen.
Well, that speaks that actually speaks well for the traditional Bible-based churches, because that would then further dilute the liberal voice within the United Methodist Church, only strengthening the traditional view.
Well, it'll be momentous and historic, because when have liberals ever started their own church? Just think back in history. It doesn't happen, or if they try it, it doesn't work. Liberals usually take over existing churches. They don't generate new churches. So it'll be an interesting experiment, but they think that history is on their side. So let them create their own new church and see if they can validate their own theory.
So Mark, you attribute the Methodist Church holding on to the traditional teaching primarily because of the international influence of the church and those that have remained steadfast in biblical teaching.
Yes, the Africans will become the majority of the church's membership in the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years. They're already close to 45% now, so it would take almost over 80%, 85% of the U.S. church to prevail. And I have to say that the evangelicals in the U.S. Methodist Church have held firm. Almost no one has flipped, and if anything, they've become stronger in recent years.
Could it be in Africa and in those developing countries where, you know, they don't have the luxury of, you know, they're really trying to survive, carve out a living for their families? They haven't been made soft and haven't strayed because of the prosperity like we have in America. Could it be that they're more focused on the essentials and not open to really the heretical teachings that we've seen in some churches in the United States?
Well, that's absolutely right. They're living much closer to the edge. They don't have the luxury for these kinds of experiments, and they're genuinely befuddled by what's happening in American culture and in the American church. They're also much more communally minded, so the hyper-individualism of American culture is also befuddling to them.
Well, it's interesting because I've watched for years what's been unfolding in the United Methodist Church, and this is encouraging. I do hope that more of the American branch of the church will take a lead from their African brothers and return to that orthodoxy of Scripture.
Well, we're already feeling their influence, and they literally have saved our church. And I think 10, 15 years from now, we may actually have a much more orthodox United Methodist Church in America.
Well, that's quite encouraging to hear. Mark Tooley, thanks so much for joining us today and giving us an update.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right. Mark Tooley, who is the president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy. You know, it's one of those things. There are encouraging things when you hold fast. What's happened in the other mainline denominations, which some have had maybe not as much international influence, but they've been so quick to cave. And I will say that the Methodists have remained firm, not all, but a large portion of them. And then, of course, with that international influence, unyielding to basically a rewriting of Scripture. It's encouraging. If we stand firm. Hey, where have I heard that before? Just stand. Amazing. All right, when we come back, the general returns. We'll be discussing with him a court ruling from last Friday where a judge declared the all-male draft unconstitutional. Is this setting up the drafting of our daughters? That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. Check it out and be sure, stand with us on this effort to end infanticide. End birthday abortions. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and at the top, you can be a part of sending a visible message to Nancy Pelosi by sending her one of those little baby hats. See how? Go to tonyperkins.com. All right, last Friday, a federal judge in based in Houston, U.S. District Court, Judge Gray Miller, ruled that the government's draft selective service system that is based on all males is unconstitutional. He basically rejected the government's arguments about excluding women based partly on their interest and readiness for combat by declaring, quote, "this argument smacks of archaic and overbroad generalizations about women's preferences," end quote. Join me now to talk about this and what may come from this court decision, and did we anticipate it, is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
Seems like you were just here yesterday.
I think I may have been.
Oh, okay. All right.
At my age, I don't remember from one day to the other.
Well, you were. Take my word for it. You were here. This really does not come as a surprise.
No. In fact, I think we sat right here and talked about exactly where this the decision by the Obama administration to put women in infantry and armor and combat arms units, where it was headed. We talked about it right here. You wrote about it, and now here we are. And it's going to get worse. I mean, this is just the first step towards, I think, forcing our daughters to register for the draft.
So this is a district court decision, so it'll be appealed. But again, the government really does not have very solid ground to stand on because of what the Obama administration had done in terms of putting women in combat units. So essentially what we... I think at the end of the day, what ends up happening, and I want to see if you agree, that women will then be required to register for selective service, mm-hmm. and in the event there is a draft, mm-hmm. Women just like our daughters would be drafted just like our sons.
That's the whole point of the selective service system, is that if we need people, I mean, we haven't drafted since 1970, but we still register for the draft, and in a time of national security crisis, The whole idea of the draft is you can recruit an army very quickly. Our daughters are going to be part of that.
Now, will they have a choice as to where they go?
Absolutely not. All combat arms specialties are open to them. You go back to Vietnam and see how many people that got drafted wound up as cooks. No, most of them wound up in the infantry. Most of them wound up in combat arms because that was the most difficult place to recruit people to, because that's where the action is.
So we're saying that based on the trajectory of the policies that this has created, mm-hmm. our daughters could be drafted to be put into frontline combat units.
That's exactly right. Our daughters today are serving in frontline combat units on a voluntary basis. They will have no options if they are drafted and we reach a point where we have to execute a draft. They will have no choice.
How can that be averted at this point?
Well, I think we've got to put a lot of pressure on the Congress. I think the Congress has got to get involved in this. I think the Congress has got to first of all, be prepared when the next court case occurs. They got to be prepared to enact legislation that will hold the draft as a male-only draft. And if we don't do that, what you and I just talked about is the ultimate outcome of all of this.
And they would not be able to put in place provisions where it would say that women could not be drafted into combat units because we're already saying that they can serve in those.
That's exactly right.
I mean, we've
right.
created it's a real mess. Yeah.
Had the Congress enacted legislation when President Obama was going down this road of putting women on the basis of, by the way, fairness.
Right, right.
Fairness, yeah, right, yeah.
So they were afraid to be seen as, you know, anti-woman by
right.
saying women shouldn't
yeah.
be in combat mm-hmm. units, and now mm-hmm. women could be forced to be in combat units.
That's exactly right. And it's not going to matter what their preference is. It's not going to matter whether they want to be in the military or whether they want to be in a combat arms unit. They are going to be sent where the needs of the services are greatest, and that is going to be in wartime in the combat arms units.
And we know without a doubt there's a difference between men and women.
Well, the last time I checked, Tony, there was a significant difference, and I am very glad that there is. But let me tell you, you and I were talking before we went on radio, but this is another assault on masculinity. Because
mm-hmm.
what that judge is saying is you've been a privileged class ever since the draft started.
That's a privilege to be drafted.
Yeah, as if it's a privilege to be drafted. And you're no different than a woman. Whatever a woman can do, anything you can do, and somehow we're missing that. Nobody's talking about that. But this is an assault on masculinity, just like all these other things that are happening.
Which ultimately leads to the demise of our country's security because our defense will not be there.
That's exactly right.
General Boykin, out of time. Thanks so much
for
stopping by again today. Maybe we'll see you tomorrow, too.
Maybe.
Okay. All right, folks. Are the Democrats, are they in a pickle over the new Green Deal? We're going to talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More to come right after this.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. All right, the Democrats are in a real pickle. All right, they're wrestling with how to deal with this controversial climate change proposal that's being championed by, you know, their new progressive wing. I should say, really, the new Democrats. It's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York. And by the way, I played this clip the other day, and it's her on Instagram cooking chili talking about this. But I just set the stage here for this discussion. I want to play that clip again.
There is a global threat to the planet, a global threat. At this point, we don't even have to prove it. Just walk outside in winter in a lot of places, and it's either way worse than you're used to or way warmer than you're used to. Hurricanes, storms, wildfires. We are dying now.
You don't have to prove it. You just don't have to prove it. We are dying now. Okay. Now that we've got the fact that you don't have to prove anything, now we can deal with their legislation. Now, here's the problem that the Democrats have with this issue is the Republicans in the Senate want to have a vote on it. That's a problem for the Democrats. Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, says the Senate will vote on the Green New Deal before the August recess. Now, that has Democratic members upset, which is interesting because the six Democratic senators who have launched presidential bids are official backers of the Green New Deal and have touted it on the campaign trail. But at the same time, Democrats accuse the Republicans of playing politics by scheduling a vote. Why? Well, because in prior elections, climate change legislation has been seen as a significant liability for Democrats in tough races. Why is that? Well, let me go on here. I'm going to actually read from a Hill article by Alexander Bolton. And it is as Schumer has tried to bridge the divisions by getting all 47 members of his caucus to support a non-binding resolution stating that climate change is real and caused predominantly by human activity and should be addressed by immediate action from Congress and the administration. Well, I thought that's what this new Green Deal did, and Mitch McConnell scheduling a vote, so why are they not for it? Well, an aide to Schumer said, we're going on offense to demand that they admit climate change is real. It's man-made. It's caused by humans, and you have to act. They've been silent. We're flipping the script. Well, no, they're scheduling a vote, but you don't want to do it. Well, one of the Democrats, Schumer, went on to, he called McConnell's plan to force a vote on the Green New Deal a diversion, a sham. Well, why? It's your bill. It's what you want. Now, let me tell you why they don't want to vote on it. They want to use it to gin up their base, but they know that this is not popular with the American people as a whole. I go back to the Pew Research Center, which is a nonpartisan, you know, certainly not conservative, wouldn't call them liberal, and they're pretty much even keel. They did a survey at the beginning of the year to basically see what the public's policy priorities for this year were. I quoted from this the other day. And, you know, the economy, I said the economy, 70% say the economy should be a top priority for the Trump and Congress this year, followed by health care costs, which continue to rise thanks to Obamacare. Education, terrorism, Social Security, Medicaid, poor and needy. When you get to climate change, you've got to go all the way down to the bottom of the list. The only thing lower is global trade. 44% of Americans said that should be a top priority for the Trump administration, okay? The lowest was global trade, 39%. But here is where the issue lies. Pew went on to look at, you know, I mean, when you look at the crosstabs and you see who responded how. On the climate change, 44%, second to last list of concerns. But among those who said it was a concern, 67% of them were left-leaning. This is a big deal to the left. This is how they motivate their base to be engaged. We have to change the climate because we're all dying now. And so they want to talk about it, but they actually don't want to vote on it because only 21% of right-thinking people, or I should say right-leaning voters, or maybe right-thinking, see climate change as a top priority. So they know that this is not an issue that brings people toward them. It only, as I said, gins up the base, gets them all excited and worked up. So they really don't want to do anything about it. They just want to keep it as a political issue. You know, it's like throwing a Scooby snack to their base to get them excited and to stay in line. But the last thing they want to do is actually vote on this, because this new Green Deal is a bad deal. But they're in a pickle. And in part, what we're seeing happening is almost a civil war within the Democratic Party. Because Nancy Pelosi, who used to be an extremist in the party, is now seen as a moderate after this last election. It was interesting. I had someone come see me from New York. I'm not going to mention any names, but lives in New York City and was going to run against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, and wanted to know if we would if he would be able to get support from Republicans if he were to run. And not run as you can't run as a Republican in that district. You have to be a Democrat, even an independent. The district's pretty left. He said, you know, do you think because of how visible she is, I said, do you think that conservatives across the country would fund a conservative Democrat to run against her? I said, I have to be honest. I don't think so. She's actually a gift to conservatives. The more that she is out there talking, the better off the Republican Party will be, if the Republican Party will stick to their principles. And that comes to this issue of abortion. and infanticide, murder, I should say, when it comes to these babies and this issue that is currently being discussed in Congress. Now, we were up, I mentioned earlier today, up on Capitol Hill for our True Blue Award ceremony. Record number, 277 members of Congress, which is good, that were 100% on pro-life issues. In fact, you can see that. You can go to TonyPerkins.com, follow links over to FRC.org, and we've got them all listed. We got the scorecard. We got the issues that are up there. You can look at that, and you can use that as you communicate with your member of Congress. But one of the things, in addition to giving them a token for their True Blue, their award that we gave them, we also gave them one of the baby hats, asking them to use that when they made speeches on the House floor, when they went on television and did interviews, to just to communicate what we're really talking about here. And it was quite amazing to see many of those members visibly impacted by those little hats. And, you know, I first, when I picked it up, you know, having been in the delivery room 5 times, you know, it brings back a flood of memories, joyful memories, but memories that are just emotional when you recall the miracle of life and all that you were feeling and experiencing at that time. And there's not a parent out there, a person out there that has not had a baby or seen a baby and seen those little hats that experience, that, you know, are not reminded of that experience. It's powerful. And it humanizes this whole debate. It reminds us that this is not a policy issue. This is not a political issue. This is about what kind of nation we will be. Will we be a nation that literally allows babies to be born, survive one attempt on their life, abortion, only to then be, as the president said, executed after birth? What kind of nation will we be? I'm going to tell you, we have drawn the line here, a red line, and it's not erasable. We must draw this line and say we will not go past this. This is like a fire break when you're fighting those wildfires. They'll go out from the fire and they'll create a fire break to keep that fire from spreading, and then they contain it and they move back. That's what we've got to do here. We have to draw the line and say absolutely not. We will not be a nation that allows babies who survive an attempt on their life through abortion to be killed or left to die. We won't let it happen. We can't let it happen. This is a moment of decision for our nation. And so I want to encourage you to pray. I was talking with members of leadership this morning about this, that we absolutely have to do everything possible to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act in this Congress or change the Congress. If they won't do it, we'll change it. We've got to have 21 Democrats to sign the discharge petition. There's got to be 218. I think so far it looks like all the Republicans will sign it when it comes out, and that's not going to come out until the first week of April. It's a process, first or second week of April. But we need to send a message now, a visible message, and that's why we've undertaken the End Birthday Abortion Campaign. Our plan is to send 90,000 newborn baby hats to Capitol Hill, to Nancy Pelosi, and to Congress to remind them these are babies that should be welcomed into the world and protected under our laws. And you can be a part of that. You can help us do that. For $9, we'll be able to send one of those hats to Capitol Hill, and to you, we'll send you a in-birthday abortion certificate so that you can put it up on your refrigerator. Every time you see it, you'll be reminded to pray for the unborn and pray for those in Congress that they would make the right decision. Even if they're, you know, even if they don't want to, they still would make the right decision. Extremely important that we do this. So I want to encourage you. You can go to TonyPerkins.com. It's right there at the top of the page, and be a part of that. And also, let me ask you to do a favor for me. The True Blue recipients. It was really good. I was 2 hours giving out the awards this morning, talking to members, shaking their hands, taking pictures with them, hugging them. They need the encouragement to know when they take the right stand and do the right thing, they need to be encouraged. And so if you're a member of Congress and you can, if I don't have it up there on the website yet, it'll be up there. TonyPerkins.com. We'll have the links on that so that you can follow it over and then find out if your member is a True Blue recipient. And then, you know, shoot them an email, send them a message, and just thank them. You know, it is really encouraging for them to get messages from you when they do the right thing. That, and many of them are kind of discouraged right now. But I want to tell you, I've been here almost 16 years. And the trends, just like Mark Tooley was talking about in the Methodist Church, if you stand long enough, if you don't grow weary in doing well, guess what? You will reap. And we're seeing positive things happen. Yes, the conservatives are in the minority right now. But the concentration of conservatives, ideological conservatives, is stronger now than any time I've been here. And there are more men and women, of deep, abiding faith in Jesus Christ that are serving here in Washington, D.C. They're here at a great sacrifice to be servants of the people they represent, but more importantly, to represent God and honor Him in their service here. And so pray for them. Encourage them. I'm reminded of that every time I'm up on Capitol Hill talking to them, and many of them are discouraged, especially with the current situation in the House and in this whole debate over, infanticide. So pray for them and encourage them, especially those that are standing firm for faith, family, and freedom. So you can find all that at TonyPerkins.com, and do join us. Help us in sending a strong message to Nancy Pelosi and in joining together across this nation to pray and to be reminded to pray for the unborn and pray for those in positions to make these decisions. By the way, they represent us. We need to communicate with them and let them know. Go to TonyPerkins.com and join the End Birthday Abortion Campaign. Folks, out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Again, visit the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.